Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. July 6, 2020. Michael Leitman, on Quora, how do you think the coronavirus pandemic might permanently change life in the United States? Considering that our values, desires, behaviors, anxieties and responses are highly influenced by our surrounding society, then there is no doubt that the coronavirus and the changes it has introduced into the world has significantly impacted our lives. In the beginning of the outbreak, most thought of it as a temporary phenomenon, that the life we lived would get back to normal soon afterward. Today, however, we already see that it is going to be around for a lot longer, and that permanent changes are set to emerge. What will those permanent changes be? The pandemic has made us reevaluate what is and isn't essential in our lives. Today, even if we have the privilege in our areas to still be able to go out to bars, restaurants, malls, gyms and flights, many think twice before going. To start with, the lockdown period we went through calmed down consumerist habits. Also, economic uncertainty as to whether there will be another lockdown makes many reconsider where they spend their money. It is as if the coronavirus made us step off of the materialistic treadmill that we were running prior to its outbreak, and we started to walk through our lives at a much slower pace. We discovered newfound interdependence and reliance on each other in order to maintain our health, as we depend on each other to uphold certain conditions in order to lessen our chances of catching the virus. The longer the coronavirus affects our lives in such a way, the more we will realize that a permanent change is at hand, a change from using each other and the ecology in the name of personal profit and individual success, to a more balanced lifestyle, keeping us closer to our homes, to our families, and to rethinking our mutual influence on each other in society. If we relate to the coronavirus as a lesson from nature, a lesson in becoming more considerate and responsible toward each other, doing away with our excessive consumeristic drives that distance us from each other and nature, and instead focus our sources of enjoyment not in what a materialistic society promotes to us, but in developing positive connections to each other, then we would make good use of this period and experience its permanent changes positively. However, if we stubbornly try to hold on to our pre-coronavirus lifestyles, then we will experience more and more suffering. That is, we would fail to learn from nature's hint as to what we need to change, and thus nature would have to give us harsher lessons in order to wake us up to relate positively to our new tighter interdependence. The virus has identified problems in the family. Question: the virus pushed people inside their families, and many have discovered how distant they are from each other. Could this make us ponder about some phenomena that lead to tragedies in relations between relatives? Answer: of course. People who had difficulty spending an hour or two a day with each other suddenly find themselves forced to communicate around the clock. It is horrible. We are not used to it. We are not brought up like that. But on the other hand, we all experienced it, somehow got used to it, got to know each other. Maybe for many years we did not even know each other as we do now. So, let's look at it positively. The coronavirus created all the conditions for us to get to know our family. And now we need to correctly compare what happened before the virus and now. I go to work, return to my family, and do I see the same or not? It was necessary that we somehow establish relations between us that we lacked before the virus, and now we can imagine them. After all, you will not run away from the family. Therefore, the virus gave us a very big gift. It forcefully imprisoned us together in one apartment. What is needed here is what we have never done, particular, psychological, social work with people. We did not prepare people for family life, for example, a man for the role of father and husband. I know this myself. Therefore, for my part, I made many mistakes in family life, and my wife on her part. And the children did not receive proper upbringing. That is, This is a complex problem that needs to be addressed. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 3, 2020. Is it easier for the world to change or perish? Each spiritual action begins with a counteraction opposite to it, as the advantage of light revealed from darkness. Otherwise we cannot feel anything because everything is perceived only in contrast. Therefore, darkness precedes light, and confusion and misunderstanding occur before clarity and awareness. And this is so in everything. Look at our life. How long will humanity suffer in order to realize the evil of egoism and finally decide that we need to free ourselves from it because it is the source of all our troubles? Although we don't know how to do this, apparently we will be forced to turn to the Creator by all of mankind. It is said the advantage of the earth, desire, is in everything. First of all, the desire should reveal the darkness, and only out of the darkness will we comprehend the light. This is exactly what is happening in our life. The whole evolution of mankind was due to the growth of egoism. And today we have come to what is called the last generation, the generation of the Messiah, Mashiach, which is obliged to awaken a higher power that will pull us out of our selfish desire. And we understand that we are not able to do this because egoism is our whole nature, our whole life. We do not know how to think differently and only reveal our evil, but we are not even able to imagine how to get rid of it. Therefore, today's condition is unusually important, unique, and has never happened in the entire history of mankind. Gradually it is dawning on us that it is no longer possible to exist as before as it has been for thousands of years. All our development has led only to the realization that we can no longer remain within the selfish nature and it is necessary to rise from it. But where to rise to and how to do it? Kabbalists say faith above reason. However, what is it and how do we achieve such a state where bestowal becomes higher and more important than receiving? Man is not capable of this. And here we are aware of our complete helplessness and we understand that there is no hope except for our Creator. Humanity begins to reveal that egoism is a force from above, and there is a higher power opposite to egoism, which we need to ask for help to turn the power of evil into the power of good, into anti-egoism. Then we will live well and happily in the new world. But so far it is extremely difficult for us. It is easier for a person to believe that the world will cease to exist at all than to imagine that he can live according to the laws of an altruistic nature. How could it be that between everyone, in any place and any state, I only reckon with how much I can give to my neighbor, and not what benefit I will get from him? Altruism is a different nature. If it clothes in us, then we will behave differently, and if not, then we won't be able to. Therefore, the only way out is to realize that it is impossible to continue existing in a selfish nature and we must move on to a new, inverse approach to life. Everything that happens brings us to this. Let's try to quickly understand that there is no other choice and that it all depends on our prayer. Indeed, it is easier for a person to imagine the destruction and collapse of the world than one's life according to the laws of bestowal. Our whole world is built on the power of egoism and its destruction will occur by the same egoistic force. There will be nothing new. We have already experienced terrible wars, disasters, and troubles in this world. Somewhere in the world, some kind of misfortune is constantly happening, and everyone understands that the world could collapse. But at the same time, the same force of egoism will remain that has led the world to death. It is much more difficult to change the program the world works according to, the nature of the relationship between inanimate, vegetative, and animate nature and people, so that all of this works in reverse, in bestowing to one's neighbor. Everyone should begin to reckon with others and take care of their welfare. This just does not fit in our head, it is impossible to imagine. Indeed, for this I need to feel a desire of others and try to fill them. And this is the way everyone should act all the time. To do this, another program must be loaded into this huge computer, in the inanimate, vegetative, and animate world and people. We cannot imagine that. No attempts by socialists and utopians to create such a world have been successful. Such a revolution can be accomplished only by the Creator, who will give us a different nature. This is what we should try to ask for, and as quickly as possible. And if not, then the suffering that is now beginning to unfold, more and more decisively pushing us to rectify the world, will oblige us. But this is a very difficult, long and painful journey, full of suffering. In fact, it is called the path of suffering. Let's go the better way of the light. To do this, we need to draw the upper force from above to clothe in us. We need to demand, to ask, the Creator to give us the power of bestowal. Otherwise, we will not succeed. We will try to come to correction ourselves until we give up on this work. Then our cry will reach the Creator, and He will give us His altruistic force. This is called the exodus from Egypt, from our egoism. But if we do not ask and do not oblige the Creator to help us, we will not be able to change anything and will suffer from our egoism more and more every day. It is not necessary to hope that the coronavirus will disappear soon. It will not leave us, and in addition, even more serious problems will come. Money, resources, and groceries will soon end, humanity will suffer terribly. And besides, hurricanes, clouds of locusts, floods, and drought are coming. All of this is so we understand that only when we appeal to the Creator do we have hope to be saved from all problems and troubles. And then when we begin to turn to Him, we will understand that the main thing here is not getting rid of problems and misfortunes. Indeed, they came for this to convince us to turn to the Creator. Therefore, it is a pity to ask Him for material benefits, it is better to ask Him to bring us closer to Him, because all happiness is there. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, July 1, 2020, Baal HaSulam, Shemati 34, The Advantage of a Land. The Coronavirus, Thoughts on Life and Death. Comment: in the times of the coronavirus, we are bombarded with reports of new cases and the number of the deceased. A person reads it all, absorbs it. Naturally, he develops a growing fear of death. My response: we are being frightened like little children. We are being provoked. Question: what's good about that? Answer: it is for us to grow up. Not to stay as little children. Question: what does our growing up entail? Thinking more about life and death? Or something else? Answer: about its purpose. Nature gives us a hint about what we have to do. This is such help. You are being taught. We have to be grateful to this virus. Nature doesn't do anything without a reason. It is better that it teaches us this way than through a third world war, which we were speculating was nearing and thinking we couldn't avoid it. Question: what attitude should one have toward death? One way or another this question arises, especially now when one might end up on a ventilator. I am asking about my attitude toward death. What should it be now when we hear about it constantly? Answer: you should have a serious attitude about it. Death is not an accident, it is a necessary state inherent in nature that we must go through. Death separates us from our animal body, my eye is detached from the body, and we can be transitioned into the following states. We can read an article about it. Here I have my teacher's book, his articles. He writes what a person must do in order to rise above this life. Everything is written in Kabbalah. Comment: this is written by a Kabbalist, while I am asking you about a simple person today. My response: what do you want with a simple person? He is like a small child, he is playing around, and he is not interested in these questions. Comment: can you lift me above death, help me cope with fear somehow? Tell me something about that, if you can. My response: I must not. Or you will begin to strive for it. You will stop being afraid of it. Question: should I be afraid? Answer: yes. Because the fear, The unknown is there specifically to encourage you to correct yourself in this world. Question: so that I would want to rise above death, above fear? Answer: that's what the coronavirus reminds you of. Meaning, it is on your side, it is your friend, it cares about you. It says, look, you're on the edge. So, come on, we still have time to do something that will allow us to pass this line beautifully, easily. It doesn't even matter how. The most important thing is that you will find your world, that is, the future world, while in this life. Question: if I treat the virus this way, will my attitude toward life and death change? Answer: everything will change. We do everything in this world based on the fact that we die. And if we knew that we were not dying, but transforming, then we would act differently, in accordance with this transformation. Just as you are now working toward a pension, or a vacation, or something else, you still think not like a small child, but further ahead. So, we really need this motivation. Comment: please clarify the term reincarnation. For many, this is an Indian concept. My response: oh no, we don't transform into birds or trees, or anything like that. Comment: if you lived like a tree, you'll become a baobab. My response: no, not at all. As a matter of fact, this is very interesting. When I was in India, I saw how much this helps people accept things in life, live with them, and remain calm, philosophically inclined. But this is not the level we're talking about. Although, when a billion people around you think this way, whether you like it or not, involuntarily you somehow fall into it. Question: what kind of reincarnation are you referring to? Answer: we are speaking only about the internal transformation, about the spiritual state of a person. Question: which changes how? Answer: it becomes free of egoism. This is the transformation from this world to the upper world. Question: when I start treating others with love? Answer: if you start practicing this today, you would already start perceiving the upper world in your relation to another. Question: so this is love and bestowal toward others? This is the upper world? If I start feeling this, I will begin to rise above death? Answer: yes. Question: and death, does it only exist when I live for myself? Answer: that is pure death. Question: living for oneself. So, actually, we are all living in the world of death? Answer: yes, this is what it is called. Question: and it seemingly does not exist? Answer: indeed. Comment: a person still feels sorry to leave his relatives, friends, habits, vacations, the sea. My response: like a child holding onto his toys. Question: yes. Sometimes he comes across these toys, and he sighs a little, I have lived. He still feels sorry to leave any of it. How do you feel about these toys? Answer: only for the purpose of ascending to the upper world, only in order to master an even greater setting for giving, for love, for coming out of oneself, above oneself, only this is worth living for. Otherwise, it only serves to fill oneself with such a minute pleasure that immediately fades, disappears, or changes. It is certainly not worth it. I think the virus will help us. Question: what is your personal attitude toward death? Answer: I am completely at peace with it. Absolutely. I agree with the upper governance, whatever it does. Question: does agreeing with the upper force calm one down? That is, one immediately annuls before it? Answer: yes. It doesn't matter what state a person is in. The main thing is that he accepts everything from above and in this way tries to be adhered to it. Question: please offer advice to a regular person, how should he treat his fears now? Answer: I would study our materials if I were him. Now people are sitting at home, and this is the most useful thing they can do for themselves. This would bring them tangible benefits. And a way out of the virus, as well as a general way out of the crisis and an overall good attitude with a thorough understanding of life and death. Question: and of each other? Answer: naturally, of each other. Good luck to us with this. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, March 30, 2020. Epidemic of lies. The general director of the World Health Organization said that false news spreads faster and is more contagious than the coronavirus itself. Therefore, we have to fight not only against epidemics but also against an infodemic. The Secretary General of the UN said that the infodemic is our common enemy and offered to fight it together. What makes a person give out false and confusing information? The fact is that we all live in a world of lies. Lies spread around the world and are passed from one person to another consciously or unconsciously. Everyone twists information the way it is convenient for them, hiding things that are not beneficial for them. That's what everyone does. It's like the children's telephone game, when the news is passed along the chain, not a single word of what the first person said reaches the tenth person. But when we grow up and become adults, we continue the same game, only the lies become much more serious. Therefore, it is not surprising that our world is full of lies and you cannot rely on news that protects either the right ones or the left ones, stipulating the opposite side. Today, there is no independent media. The coronavirus brought us to the fact that no one believes anyone because of false news spreading in all directions. The problem is that the media is no longer focused on the public, but is politicized, and it is conducting a war between the right and the left, between different interested groups. Therefore, they always have money for this war, they no longer depend on whether the readers will buy this newspaper. Today, newspapers do not depend on buyers at all, but receive funding from financial and governing circles. Therefore, there is no confidence in the information distributed in the media. They print some unconfirmed medical reports about drugs against the virus. But why do people believe this lie and even seem to need it? There is a joke that if we now started eating only pure, organic food, we would be poisoned because we are no longer used to good, natural products that existed hundreds of years ago. There is a great deal of truth in this joke. And the same applies to the media. We are not used to the truth, and every generation gets what it deserves. We accept the lie and enjoy it. We do not even pay for this false news, we get it for free. Lies beget lies, the generation is corrupted, and feeds on spoiled food. But otherwise, there would be nothing to eat at all. So in the store we buy vegetables and meat. Realizing that there are only chemicals and antibiotics inside, but there is no choice. You have to eat something. We live in a synthetic world. No one needs the truth, after all it does not matter if a person would know it. The truth cannot be passed on, sold, or used if everything around is false. The truth in our world is like a foreign currency that is not accepted in this country in any store. If I tell the truth in this world of lies, I will be known as a liar. This happened to King Solomon at the time of the First Temple. No one wanted to recognize him as a king. He made wise speeches, but everyone around him was so stupid that no one believed his words. Not until he reached the Sanhedrin, where the great sages gathered, did they already understand and recognize him. In only one place in the whole country did they realize he was a wise man worth listening to. But today we do not have even one such place, not in the government, not in banks, not in any organization or party, and not anywhere else. Everyone is playing the same false game. A Kabbalist lives inside his little world of truth and everyone around him thinks that he is irrational, detached from reality, and they do not listen to what he says. And that is a good thing because in the old days, the prophets were burned at the stake. How is it possible to tell if the news are true or false? I follow the news but only in order to feel the trend of development and its speed. That is, I take into account not the news itself but its direction. People are terribly confused by the news that spreads communications. In fact, this is not a means of communication but a means of disconnection. What kind of correction should we make in society in order to return to truthful news? This requires a lot of painstaking work. After all, we are already used to eating spoiled foods, have learned to digest them and still feel good. The body is used to making corrections so that we even accept rotten food as relatively fresh. And if we consume really fresh food, we will have indigestion. Therefore, here we need a very long way. And it is not only about food for the stomach, but also for the mind, soul, and heart. We must gradually get out of this lie with the help of integral education that the Kabbalists talk about. We need to explain to everyone that we live in a world of lies, and we need to get out of them because it is impossible to continue in this way. The coronavirus will lead us to feeling the point of truth, to the final revelation of the falseness of life. We will see that such a life is meaningless and hopeless both for us and for our children. We are already approaching this insight. If we continue in the old way, we will destroy ourselves. This end is already close because humanity understands that it has lost its way and direction and that there is no means to correct the situation, there is no cure for the virus. Or we decide that there is no choice and we must reveal the meaning and purpose of life, the correct way of existence, and find where the truth is in our life. Human beings are the most intelligent, developed, knowledgeable, and have made our lives such that they are completely depreciated. And this is because we are guided not by reason, but by feelings, and cannot overcome our emotions by reason. Therefore, feelings play with us, pulling us in different directions, as they say, let's eat and drink because tomorrow we will die anyway. Let's hope that this attitude will change. From Cab TV's The World, May 26, 2020. Michael Leitman, on Quora, what should I do to feel less stressed? Human nature is a desire to enjoy, and we are at rest when we enjoy ourselves. The problem today, which is also why stress is on the rise, is that our desire to enjoy grows from one generation to the next, and we thus need more and different kinds of enjoyment to fulfill ourselves. Likewise, since we all wish to enjoy ourselves more and more, we find ourselves in a situation where we need to share with others, and it becomes increasingly difficult to enjoy our lives. As such, we become increasingly stressed. Moreover, increasing stress coincides with more heart attacks, depression and drug abuse. In other words, more stress equates to a higher probability of disease. It might appear as if stress indirectly influences disease, but stress is in fact the main cause of disease. Every disease in the body, especially of the internal organs like heart and lung disease, can be traced back to stress. Stress follows us our entire lives, from the moment we leave our mother's arms until the moment we die. As small children, we experience stress at kindergarten because we are placed somewhere we do not want to be. Before the days of the schooling system, children were raised by their mothers and grandmothers, and later followed in the footsteps of their father's occupations, keeping within the family circle. Today, we need to meet society's higher standards. That is, we are raised with examples of fierce competition in order to reach lavish wealth and success, and are under constant pressure to keep up with today's social standards. Situations where both parents work all day, neglecting their children, have become commonplace. Such children are left in the hands of kindergartens and schools from early morning until afternoon on a daily basis, an environment which is itself very stressful for them. By nature, children need to be raised within the family, or in a wider circle that the children feel as their own family. The moment children are extracted from a family environment and placed into kindergartens and schools, they experience stress due to feeling insecure in their new environment. In order to find calm, safety and confidence, The children try to be like their peers, seeking to hide among them. After the initial stage of fitting in, when they feel accepted by their peers, the desire to enjoy then continues, pressuring them from within, making them want to stand out. They sway back and forth between their comfortable state where they fit in, and an ambitiousness to express their pride and power. The bigger the ego, the more they're willing to step outside of their comfort zone and put themselves at risk. These two poles of remaining in our comfort zones versus the desire to be a prominent figure in society stay with us our entire lives, placing us under constant stress. In addition, the social and media influences that continuously bombard us with competitive, materialistic and individualistic images of success, that is, where being more successful is perceived as being stronger, richer, faster or more unique than others in a variety of ways, add immensely to the stress we feel, as it becomes increasingly harder to stand out in such a society. Thus, rates of depression, anxiety, loneliness, drug abuse and suicide all rise together with rising stress rates. Therefore, by understanding the nature of stress and how it is an integral aspect of the society we are raised in, we can conclude that in order to feel less stressed in the long term, there is a need for a solution not only at the level of what should I do to feel less stressed. A comprehensive and lasting solution to reducing stress requires enhancing our feeling of connection in society, so that we feel society like one big family. Essentially, the competitive, egoistic, materialistic and individualistic paradigm we are in, which values the stronger, bigger, faster and richer individual, needs inverting, so that we value contribution to society more than individual success. We would then be on course to creating more balanced lives for everyone, reducing stress, and its related problems. The source of ultimate pleasure. Question: under the primitive communal system, basic desires dominated a person: food, nutrition, sex, safety. Then came the period of the era of civilizations, in which the desire of man for wealth prevailed. During the Middle Ages, desires for power began to dominate. In the 15th to 20th centuries, the period of the Renaissance, scientific discoveries, discoveries of new continents, etc. occurred marked by a desire for knowledge. And now, in the 21st century, we see that we are at some new stage in the development of our desires. What are these desires? And for what? Answer: in actuality, we have come to a state where we have nothing more with which to fill ourselves. Absolutely nothing. Our world can give us nothing more. You can, of course, fight each other for a better place on the council, in governments, etc., but this is not growth. Our growth has come to an end, since we have already mastered everything that is on earth. And although we know little about it, we will not learn any more, because we are closed in ourselves. We are a thing in ourselves. The only thing we can do, and this is given to us as people living in our so-called world, is to reach the next level of the universe. But for this we must become one whole, if not completely, then at least to some extent. As soon as we start internally getting closer so as to help each other ascend, unite into one common whole, we will immediately feel the integrity of our world. It will manifest itself in all of us, and we will feel ourselves existing at the next level of nature. Question: but from what will a person receive pleasure? Answer: from whatever higher levels of nature will be revealed, and this will fill him. This enjoyment of the integrity of nature, the enjoyment of how the different, opposite properties of nature complement each other and unite, will fill us. Question: take, for example, two people. One enjoys basic desires for food, sex, and family, and the second for knowledge. He can sit all day in the laboratory and spend all his life researching some bugs or inventing a vaccine, and this fills him. What is the difference? Answer: it doesn't matter. It is clear that everyone is engaged in what nature pushes him toward. And then we will find a single hole between us and see that, acting each at his own level, we reveal the general integral force of nature, called the Creator. The comprehension of this force, which manifests itself in a variety of variations, but at the same time is one common whole, this is the source of the highest pleasure. From CAB TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, April 23, 2020. How should we respond to criticism of Kabbalah? Question: how should we respond to the fierce criticism of Kabbalah coming from family during the quarantine period? Answer: you should explain to your family that Kabbalah talks about how to create good relationships between people, how to raise children correctly, how to make sure that when you drive you are careful not to hit others or crash into the car in front of you, and to give way to others. A person should understand that society is integral and how beneficial it is for it to be connected through good relations. Kabbalah explains the correct social structure in which everything works smoothly as one single organism. Creating such an organism is completely contrary to our egoism, which is decidedly opposed to it. This is the state we are in, but we must still find a way to correct ourselves. Kabbalah talks about how this can be done. There is a positive force in nature, altruism. We must attract it to help us balance the negative force, the egoism that initially exists in us. Then we will live in an open, friendly, kind society. Otherwise, we will bring ourselves to mutual destruction. Tell this to your family. It is unlikely they will be able to object. Kabbalah is the science of how to use the positive force of nature, the quality of bestowal, the quality of connection, against our egoistic quality of separation and distance. This is the science of balancing the two opposing forces in human society, positive and negative. By balancing them out, we transform the family, society, and the environment into something good and positive. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 3, 2020. A spiritual object and its name. Baal HaSulam, Shemati number 3, the matter of spiritual attainment. This is so because the word name indicates attainment, like a person who names some object after having attained something about it, and according to one's attainment. Baal HaSulam writes that which we cannot comprehend, we cannot name by name, we cannot precisely determine it. Therefore, name indicates the level of the attainment, the attribute, the connection with others and many other things. As in our world, when we turn to a certain person, we do not simply call him by his name. After all, one who knows him immediately understands his connections with the world, the state he is in, how he is connected with others, etc. And for someone who doesn't know that person, his name means nothing. That is, the name indicates all the properties of a person and the world around him, with which he is interconnected. It is the properties of the object itself and the one with whom or with what it is associated that determine the name in Kabbalah. The very name of an object, the soul, or the world, or the level, or the force, determines the basic attribute of this phenomenon, the force, the object, the volume, or the level that we are talking about. In Kabbalah, a name is not given by chance like in our world. It is based on the numerical value of the attributes of an object, on its connection with the world, which point of the general soul it is in, which forces influence it and how it responds to them. In general, all this determines and defines the object and its name. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 8, 2019. In an ocean of infinite light. In the article The Matter of Spiritual Attainment, Shemati 3, Baal HaSulam writes, with respect to spiritual attainment, reality in general is divided into three discernments: 1. Atzmuto, his self; 2. Ein Sof, infinity; 3. The souls, which are the receivers of the good that he wishes to do. The souls are the desire to enjoy, which receive the light of the Creator, the filling that comes from Him. Ein Sof is called so because it expresses the connection of the Creator with the souls. This is actually how He wants to bring us pleasure, to fill us so that we will feel Him as an infinite source. We do not attain anything other than this connection, and so we cannot speak about anything else. It is in this connection with Ein Sof that everything begins. When we begin to attain the Creator, the upper world, we discover that this state is unlimited. It is as if there is an infinite ocean around us from which you can take whatever you like, and it all depends only on your desire. Similarly, when we begin to reveal the Creator's light, we feel as if we are swimming inside Him since He surrounds us. We understand that we are in the ocean of the Creator's light, and His attitude toward us is absolutely good, eternal, infinite, and perfect. But how can we receive anything from this state? Imagine that you are like a newborn and your parents relate to you with infinite love and benevolence. What is next? You do not know what to ask for, what to demand, what to do, and how to relate to them because you are facing absolute love. Such a state, which we experience when we begin to reveal the Creator, seemingly stops a person, since what can one do if one encounters such an attitude? So, we begin to realize that our mutual cooperation with the Creator can be built with certain boundaries when we try to create a kind of barrier between us and the Creator so that we will be able to feel ourselves in some kind of framework. Otherwise, it is as if we are swimming in an ocean and cannot scrutinize anything at all, cannot feel anything. As created beings, we can exist only when there are specific, accurate frameworks which enable us to feel ourselves in relation to certain qualities and influences. But if there is no framework, this situation cannot be described or felt, and we cannot integrate it into our attributes in any way. We must place ourselves in some framework, enclose the Creator in this framework, and then we will be able to speak about our attitude or about our connection with Him. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 8, 2019. Tune into the correct perception of the world. Question: you are talking about nature as a derivative of my own properties, that something seems to depend on me. Are there no absolute, unchanging laws and forces that would act independently of my perception? Answer: of course there are. But you want to understand the integrity of nature. And since you perceive it only in your sensations, you must somehow adjust them, change them to the correct perception. Question: that is, I, as a particle of nature, should feel its integral picture? Answer: yes. Therefore, Kabbalah speaks only about this. In order to comprehend all of nature, you must, as they say, relax and rise above your egoism. Then you will feel nature not through your egoism, but as a system existing outside of you. You will begin to feel that you exist not individually, but in an eternal, perfect total. You will feel not yourself, but the big picture as a whole, all the laws, the functionality of this system, in which everything is in mutual movement, complementation, and communication, in absolute integration. Then you will understand what you are missing, what you must add to this eternal, perfect integral picture, which, passing through your subjectivity, through your egoism, gives you a completely distorted picture of reality. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 17, 2020. We will be different. Question: what is nature? Answer: our nature is the egoistic desire to receive, to enjoy ourselves, to be within ourselves, and for ourselves. And the opposite nature that we do not feel is altruism, caring for others, love for others. We do not feel this, but we can somewhat imagine it from the example of how a mother treats her child, although these are also egoistic manifestations. In our world, there can be no true altruistic relation between one creature and another. But by studying Kabbalah, we will see that this is still possible. There is the upper light, a special substance that can affect and change us. And we will become different. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 19, 2020. New Life 1178. Can we make heaven on earth?
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzamazoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about what is the right way to digest this thing called life. We have a digestive system that digests what we eat. Besides that, there's also digestion on the level of thoughts, emotions, things are happening, how to correctly work with that, how to correctly digest reality. Be with us, Nitza, please. Yeah, how to digest life. This is one of the more complicated things that we have to deal with, especially nowadays. And it's kind of hard to digest life as it is. We see it with younger children that they have a hard time to digest life as it is. Why are things happening? What's going on? Also grown-ups. All of these inner processes, we see that these are things that we're all dealing with, starting with little children and up to grown-ups and older people. And many times life presents us with different states that we don't know how to deal with. Could be acute or extreme situations like loss or accidents, but sometimes it's just life. Life itself, the day-to-day life. And we'd like to understand, why is it sometimes so hard for us to digest life that seemingly supposed to be a good, nice, simple thing? Supposed to be. Right. Why the hardship? Where does that come from? Life was not given to us in order for us to digest it, eat it, swallow it, and enjoy ourselves. Not for that. No. We're swallowing life in a very dangerous way. And this creates many problems for us. To swallow life. That we put them in our mouth and through the throat, it goes down to our stomach and until we digest it and get rid of all of it, it costs us dearly. That it costs us dearly, this we feel. I don't think that our life was given to us in order for us to be able to digest them at all. Why? What is the meaning of life? What is it? Were we to know, then maybe we would have changed the meaning of life, the process. What are we swallowing? Why? What for? No one's asking about it. No one teaches us about it. When I was a child, when I was young, I used to ask my parents. They didn't know what to say. What did you ask? What are we living for? Simple question. You know, like a child asks, Mom, what are we living for? What's the meaning of all of this? My mom was a doctor, well-known doctor, gynecologist. She also was engaged in research, not only medicine. And she didn't know what to say. She said, we live. Because we live, we're human beings. You see, there's a still vegetative and animate. She explained everything very thoroughly. It's also kind of close to the wisdom of Kabbalah, but there's nothing new about it. There's the still, the vegetative, the animate, and human beings. And we're also on the animate level. We exist. We exist in order to bear children, help them develop, and die. And they, in their turn, do the same, and so on. Meaning, we have to live in order to arrange our life as correctly and safely as possible in the best possible way for ourselves and our offsprings. This is what I heard from my mom. And I remember that I did not accept that at all. I didn't see that anyone's enjoying life. Neither my parents, that were really working day and night all the time. Also, other children like myself. Also, the other grown-ups. At school, kindergarten, on our block. I didn't see that anyone has a real meaning to life. Live for what? In order to every day cover and cover for one's deficiencies, and at the end of the day, to fall on your bed, like Charlie Chaplin in modern times. So what do? So the problem in digesting life is, first of all, because it's unclear what are we living for. This is the main thing, but I don't know why. Were there a reason, a purpose, or life to give me some kind of answer that you're suffering, but after that, you're going to get a ticket to heaven, to something. Okay, it's worthwhile. Or you're going to live for 100 years now, and it's a really hard life, but each and every day you're going to gain more and more and more and more, and afterwards you pass away, and for another 50 years you're going to live in heaven. Look, this is heaven. Look. And then I look, yeah, good. It's worth it. So you have a savings plan and insurance. But we don't have any of that. And therefore, man is more miserable than the still, the vegetative, and the animate, because they don't have that question. They just live their life. Yeah, sheer instinct. We have emotion and intellect, and this question that pricks our mind, an eternal question. What am I living for? And so, I'm flawed more than all the others because I don't have an answer to the question of what am I living for, meaning I live as an animal, but I also have the mind to understand that my life has no beginning, middle, or end, that there is something whole, complete, or eternal left from them. And the main question is, what for? Why? And the more a person develops, the more educated he becomes, more ready for research, and he asks himself, why, what for? So, in our generation, we reach a state where it's better to die than live this way. It's better. What for? I heard many people say that. Children telling their parents, why did you give birth to us? If I wouldn't have been born, then what would have happened? Nothing. Look what we're doing in order for a woman not to get pregnant. And so, what's with all those seeds that didn't become babies, didn't become human beings, weren't born? What about them? Nothing. They didn't develop. That's it. There is some kind of biological case that has no personality of its own. And so fine, no one suffers, no one lives his life like a dog with his tongue hanging out, running after things all the time that won't give him any pleasure, he's just running after it all. I have no answer. So, the younger generation that has this kind of feeling of an inability to digest life. It's like kind of resistance. It's kind of, I don't want to take it in the way it is. This resistance, it points at some higher need, man's higher need to understand what is the meaning of life, what is life meant for. Here you're already talking about the solution. But the hardship itself, were a person to know that all these hard states eventually will lead him to a solution, that he'll ask, and oh, now I understand that here, probably, this is where the treasure is, the solution, the something, the other half of this question, the answer to it. But I don't see that people are attaining this in any way. Our generation is facing these eternal questions, and what do they have as a result? It's interesting, because many people ask this question, and still the answer is unclear. True, because even if a person as if gets some kind of answer for himself, then it calms him down, and the others. You can't pass it on to them. But this question is so intimate, personal, particular, that there's no one answer for everyone, but everyone has to find an answer of their own. And maybe to be satisfied by it, or that it really satisfies them. I don't know why it came to mind, but many times you see little children that they don't want to eat something. I don't want that. And then you tell them, if you're going to eat, you're going to be strong, it's good for you. And somehow he opens his mouth and takes another bite. So what could convince us to swallow and digest life in order to keep on developing? People do it because they have no choice. That's it. Were the solution appealing, then I'd run to it. Suppose I'm told, there's a special door, and you open it, and behind that, the Garden of Eden. Where is it, and how much does it cost? Yeah, I'm standing in line. But because there is no such thing, then... What I don't understand is, everything you described up until now, very precisely, if I look at how humanity developed, this is exactly what made room for the development of different religions and beliefs, each of which promise in their own way that desirable Garden of Eden. So one religion will tell you, great, you want to go there, you have to do 1, 2, 3, 4. Another religion will say, you want to go to the Garden of Eden, do this and that. Today you have like a menu. It's like you go into a restaurant, everyone has their promises. And there are billions of believers that are waiting for the Garden of Eden. I read this research that there are 2,800 different kinds of religions and beliefs in the world. Okay, so there are billions that do find satisfaction in that and in that ticket to heaven, as you said before. Maybe it helps them digest life, but there are billions that don't. I want to focus on those that aren't satisfied with that and they're not believers of one kind or another. It's good to be a believer. You know, a person shuts the curtains and lives his life, so to speak. I'm told that at the end there's the Garden of Eden. That's it. I believe in that. And you can't break that in a person. For him, it's a part of his life. I live this life however I can, and at the end, there's the Garden of Eden, so it's worthwhile. So, those that are content with that, let's leave them aside. Let's take the rest of the people. There are the believers and the non-believers. Let's take the non-believers for a moment. What can they do? What can the wisdom of Kabbalah renew in their life in order to allow them to understand this thing called life a bit better? What does the wisdom of Kabbalah have to offer a person? The Garden of Eden. Again, the Garden of Eden. Ah, Kabbalah promises that too. Exactly. So this is the Garden of Eden number, but it's a different Garden of Eden. There you have virgins and good food and everything you want. if we're talking about Arabs. For Christians, I don't know what prayers and something. For Jews, what do they have? I don't know. I didn't research the field. But let's focus on the wisdom of Kabbalah. It promises the Garden of Eden too? Yeah. So it's just another religion, belief. No, it's not a religion or belief, because the wisdom of Kabbalah tells a person you shall see your world in your lifetime. It's something else. It's not that you'll die, and after you die, then this is what you'll get. But now, before you die, you have to open the door to the Garden of Eden. That's something else. How does this faith or belief... Is it? It depends on how we interpret this word. Because it confuses. Because I understand that the Garden of Eden that you're talking about, let's try and describe it. For example, like you said before, that for Muslims, maybe heaven or the Garden of Eden is 72 virgins and different things that they're promised. But what does the wisdom of Kabbalah promise? The wisdom of Kabbalah promises a whole, complete, and eternal life. Perfection. And this perfection is achieved on condition that we attain the quality of bestowal and love toward others. So you're actually saying, wait a moment, Kabbalah promises an eternal life, but for me it's hard to digest life as it is. You want to give me an eternal life? No, no, whole and complete life. And how is that different than what we have now? That you don't know what wholeness and perfection is. You're living out of deficiency. You're lacking something? Now I got it. I lack something else? I got it. Those of Kabbalah says, no, this isn't life. It's like a dog on the street looking every time, finding something for himself. It's the life of a dog. The eternal, whole, complete life is one which fulfills me with eternal peace, that I'm on the level of the upper force, of the Creator. I see from one end of the world to the other. I understand and know all the worlds, in all times, all the souls, everything in general, everything there is, that it's included inside of me, that everything that exists in reality, if you can say that it exists, it all exists in me. I understand, feel, know, control it, and that's my life. That there's nothing more than that. This is what the wisdom of Kabbalah promises a person. And here, in this life, not after I die, and then no one comes back, so you can't say. But in this life, I'm trying to imagine life as you're depicting it, to feel it like you're describing, because my life today is, I'm trying to all the time, I lack something, and I'm searching for where can I get it, absorb it into myself. There was this very interesting case in the city of Bnei Brak when I used to live there. I'm sure that people still remember that. There was this notice in the newspaper, and also, you know, these small posters on billboards. There was this one person who was pretty well known. He said, in a short period of time, as the doctors say, and I also feel that, I am going to die for sure. There's no question about it. I want to make a deal with you. When I'll already be there and you'll be here, you pray for the ascent of my soul there, and I promise you, I'm writing this down now, that from there I will care for you here. A kind of agreement. You know, it was on billboards, on the street. Interesting. My teacher, of course, he laughed. First of all, how come he thinks that he's going to heaven? Why does a person think that that's how it's going to be? And how can he know what, how about these systems? So, we laughed a bit about it. What I want to say is, you see, people want to promise their continuity. Going back to what Kabbalah promises, you shall see your world in your lifetime. He promised that a person can reach the Garden of Eden in his lifetime here and now. And when you described this Garden of Eden, you described an eternal kind of peace in which a person understands and digests his life. According to this method of the wisdom of Kabbalah, how does a person attain that? You said that there is a basic condition that a person acquires a new quality of love for others. What's the connection between developing this new quality of loving others and feeling and being able to digest life? That's life altogether. Otherwise, what are you promised? 72 virgins? No, I'm putting that aside. And, you know, a good barbecue wedding. No, I'm not going into these promises. I only want to understand, what does the wisdom of Kabbalah promise? I summarized it. If a person will develop a quality of love toward others, he will be able to digest life. This the promise? Yeah. Why? Why if a person develops a quality of love for others, this will allow him to digest life? Because then he will feel all people, all souls that exist in this world and that also come in their different incarnations from above down, from below up, he will digest them as existing in him, related to him, and he's related to them, that they're interconnected. And therefore, in that, he will feel the whole of reality. And then the entire reality exists in him, and then he'll be like the Creator, King of the world. And how is that related to your ability to digest what's happening to you in life? Because if I'm connected by ties of love that I integrate with the rest of the souls, then sure I know what's happening with me because I am in a single system with them. So the reason for which it's hard for a person to digest life today, it's only because he's not connected with others, he's separate on his own, and he's trying to suckle from life whatever he can, and he feels that he's suffocating. Right. And you're saying that there is a kind of trick here, that if we connect emotionally, then all of us, each of us through the others, we start feeling the whole of reality. Because man is on the highest level of reality, and then in that we include the whole of reality. So I know the entire world, all the souls, everything, and the one that fulfills them, gives birth to them, enlivens them, it's all mine. I just don't get where you're saying that love connects a person to the rest of the souls. I don't feel that that's my problem. I have a problem with my neighbors at work. You know, souls, they're all kind. The stories. People aren't that great. So how's that related to the people around you? You start loving them. And then what? I understand that this is the initial condition in order to open the gates of heaven. Fine. Suppose somehow, I don't know how, but I started some kind of miracle. I don't know. I started loving people around me. How does that help me digest life? Because then you start feeling what life is. Life is the common force that is in circulation in all the souls, circulating in all the souls. Where are these souls? What are these souls? the way each and every one feels them. So, going back, if I start loving the people around me, then I start feeling the flow of life? Yes, in everyone. And how does this flow of life help me digest life? You feel a collective life, a comprehensive life. And it's all called the upper force that fulfills everyone, enlivens everyone. You start feeling the source of life in it, not just for one person, but for everyone. This general source of life for everyone is called Creator, Boe in Hebrew, from the words Boe, come and see. You come to a state where you reveal it. So when something unpleasant happens that I really can't digest, I simply can't. How now, if I feel love towards others, how do I relate to that unpleasant thing? You accept the good and the bad. Because it's clear to you that if you correct yourself, then what you feel as bad, you'll feel as good. What do you mean by correct yourself? Correct your ego. Meaning, to connect to others in love, that's to correct. Yeah. And how will that change that bad feeling that suddenly I'll see as something good? Because you'll connect to them in a good and nice way. But something bad happened to me that I can't digest. I don't know, something happened in life. So I'm telling you, if you'll start relating to other people with love, you'll start feeling that your life is filled with love too. And you will start feeling good. You'll start feeling good. And nothing to add. So what is the key? What is the key to correctly digest this thing called life? Love is the key to the doors of heaven. And the Garden of Eden itself is where all of us reach a whole, complete, and eternal connection. Dr. Leitman, you gave us a lot of things to think about. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.